we are with another episode of the Who's Where podcast. I am your host, Chase Manyfield. We are in Brooklyn, New York, with special guest today. Max, what's good?
What's going on, guys? Coming to you live from Brooklyn today. Very excited, you know, for a second half of our first season. Very special guest today, so hope you guys enjoy.
We got a class of 2014.
Yeah.
Lucy Claire Spooner. What's up?
Hey, hi.
How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate you coming.
Definitely. What brings you out here to New York?
Well, so right after college, I moved up here, literally a week after graduating, and it's 9 years ago, ever since.
Are you from here?
No, I'm from Williamsburg, Virginia.
Okay.
Are you 757?
No, I'm not 757. Do I walk like I'm from 757?
On this podcast, somebody said 757 one time.
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay, it's not you.
I'm from A5.
Nah,
that's my part.
Stay
on the grind.
I understand.
Nah, New York, that's the opposite of Williamsburg, Virginia, pretty much.
Still on the East Coast.
Okay.
Still on the East Coast.
Okay, that's fair.
But, little town to small town girl to big town girl.
So what are you doing currently? Give everybody an update on what you're currently doing.
Yes, so I am a painter. I've been painting full-time for about 4.5 years, and before that I was working in interior design, we can get into that at another point if you want to. I paint pretty much all day is my aim.
Yeah.
On a beautiful, perfect day, I'd be painting all day, but there's all kinds of marketing, other stuff to do, Instagram history. I spent an hour and a half making an Instagram reel, so
it's a full business. Did I read that you were, did you grow up in Saudi Arabia?
I did, yeah. So I was born in Houston, and when I was 2 months old, my family, the three of us, me and my parents, went to Saudi Arabia in a small American compound called Dahran, which is all the way on the East Coast, and lived there for all of the 90s. Moved back when I was going into third grade. So talk about culture shock.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabia, tiny compound going, but very, like, very diverse in a kind of a strange way, like in a more international kind of a way, to Little Williamsburg, Virginia, which has many great things about it, but diversity of international culture. It's not one of
them. Do you still like have friends out there?
Is it digital friends? A little, yeah, exactly. Like when I moved back, I was so young. It was before Facebook, before AIM.
Yeah.
Any of that. So, but my mom is keeping good touch with some people, and then some friends. Kind of like we've kind of found each other on Facebook throughout the years, but never really acknowledged it. Kind of strangely enough, here and there. But my mom definitely keeps in touch.
That's cool. So, what made you decide to come from UB? I guess it's a little bit more like of a traditional path from Williamsburg.
To UVA?
Yeah. What made you go to UVA?
I almost always wanted to go to UVA.
Really?
Yeah. I had a great, really wonderful girl who I looked up to a lot when I was growing up, and she played tennis at Virginia, and we played tennis at the same time. Well, I'm like, I don't know how much younger than her. Caroline Hammond is her name. And we had the same tennis coach and all of that. And so I kind of had my sights set on playing tennis at Virginia, and then I did. I walked on to the team. I was not a star by any means, like you two. But it was a great, you know, that was kind of how I ended up really wanting to go on the more on the sporty side. And but it's also a great school.
Is Williamsburg a big Virginia Tech group? Like, is that like a...
No, it's...
Not a hokey city?
No. It's, like, directly in between Richmond and the beach.
Okay.
So, it's on the more on the east side. I think there's a lot of hokies, for sure. but it's also where William Henry is.
Okay.
So, it's oftentimes, like, kids who don't want to go... Like, William Henry's a great school, but I didn't want to go in my backyard.
Yeah.
It's literally across the street from my grandmother's house. And so I wanted to get to, I wanted to go to a good school, but away from home.
So did you major in art at UVA? You majored in design or what?
No.
Was that so? What? How did you get from UVA?
You ready
to
for
arts?
The wandering path?
Absolutely.
So I went in and was very gung ho on the tennis front. And I had a great sports therapist who like totally changed my life. And I wanted to be a sports therapist. I wanted to do the same thing for somebody else. And so I was majoring in psychology. And then because I had taken some classes in high school, I had like literally fell into a French major.
Yeah. That's how it was for me a little bit though.
Yeah.
You took like AP French or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like one class. That was actually my easiest class that you
needed. That's why I was sort of taking it, because I really liked them.
Yeah.
And I needed some classes that were easy to kind of juggle with practice schedule and all of that.
I took 7 years of French growing up and I made the French 3.
Language
ain't for me.
We can work.
All right. I got parler vous français. That's about it. That's it.
So I was thinking I was going to go into sports psychology, and it just one thing led to another, and it was not the right path. Frankly, UVA is a great psychology department, but it's really, in my experience, it's very research-based.
Yeah.
And if you want to go into being a therapist, you need the clinical side. At one point, I knew really well, but I was trying to make that work. And when you're a really research-based school, the nobody who I spoke to really answered my questions on how to go down that path, which I think is, anyway, but it all worked out. Because a summer after my third year, I was studying abroad in Lille, in France, which is, again, how I landed my major.
When I went to Paris, that first year I was learning in class wasn't translated.
No. Yeah, it's a little bit different. It's a little different. you need a little more time.
You need
a French girlfriend. That's what you need. You need a Parisian girlfriend. That you'll learn real quick. It was just one of those beautiful moments where I was in this gorgeous old city and speaking with a friend of mine in the program. She's a photographer now, actually beautiful photographer. Mina, and she's married, and I can't remember her name. And now I can't remember her non-married name. Anyway, first name is Mina. She's a lovely, beautiful girl, photographer. But she was telling me about these architecture classes she had taken at UVA. She's like, you should really take it. I had, one more year. And I kind of filed that away, and then got to be signing up for classes my fourth year, and I just signed up for whatever random, and I woke up one morning just like, I had totally forgotten Mina's classes, and I ran to my computer, and actually I was reading this article, and that's kind of what made me remember it too, but this like moment of, oh my god, I have to sign up right now. And it turns out it was the last day to add classes.
Okay.
And so I ran around grounds. I'm sure I was like skipping class to try to do this, but I was like leaving notes on the door to this professor's office, like, could you please let me in? I had taken too many, I signed up for too many classes, so I was emailing my Dean Most, she's the best.
Yeah.
And she's the most best. She at 11:30 that night, she finagled my classes so that I dropped the ones I needed to drop, and Sanda Iliescu, who was the professor of lessons in making, got me in to this class that then totally changed my life. Sanda then introduced me to Pam Black, who's a beautiful artist. She and I are still very good friends, and so I took that class my spring semester. And then that was a drawing class with Pam. So really those two classes, which were both in the architecture school, Those are the two that really kind of propelled me to keep working on my art. But at the same time, I was really wanting to go into interior design. So it all kind of works together in a way.
Did you ever fear that like art wasn't a career?
Totally.
So he's like, I gotta do interior design.
Meanwhile, I'm speaking of money and interior design. But I didn't know that.
You can tell my interior designer, they charge me arm and leg right now.
That's the problem. But you have to pay for the stuff. And so by the time you pay for the stuff, the person's hours.
So she was telling me the truth, and she said most of that's for material furniture?
Yes! That's
she gave me her hourly rate. It's more than I charge. Pay that much.
Maybe you should. Just a thought.
So you really weren't that big into art until like your fourth year, it sounds like?
Yeah, like as far as college goes. But right. My grandfather was an artist. She went to Pratt Institute, which is quite close to here.
We were actually just talking about that. But okay.
Really?
Know a lot about him. We were talking about the best art schools in the country. Somebody who went to VCU said it was VCU, but apparently it's probably Pratt. But
no, Pratt is a VCU really is.
Somebody not to be mentioned.
Not to be mentioned here. Little upset that it's not VCU, but that's okay.
No, VCU is actually also a really good one. But my grandfather went to Pratt, and then I've always been painting and drawing and making things. I was an only child, and that's like a big way I self-entertained. Lots of reading, lots of drawing by myself.
So it was a passion.
Yeah. Forever. But I just never really thought about it as a career. Yeah. It was, just you make artwork and then somebody has to buy it.
But you can charge whatever you want to charge.
Yeah, but you still have somebody else to buy
it.
Somebody has to buy it. Just because you put a price tag on it doesn't mean it sells. But then I ended up getting an interior design internship in the city right after graduating, moved up here, because this New York City is really the center of the design world and art world. But there are designers everywhere, of course, but it's a bigger corporation here. And I worked for a couple years here, and then in interior design, and I was still drawing constantly. I was drawing on the subway. I'm always late.
Like, what are you drawing? Like, are you like a figures person?
Yeah.
I love
to draw the figure. Okay. And because I had my first job was in Brooklyn, I was taking the subway from Manhattan, and always late. And it makes me very nervous to be late, even though I am always late. But once you're on the subway, if you're 10 minutes late, there's nothing you can do. So I would just sit there and draw the people in front of me just to kind of pass the time and get my mind off of,
some interesting drawings?
Yeah.
Based on the subway experience.
They were cool and, always trying to get somebody when he wasn't looking at me or she. And I was getting some good feedback from the drawings. And it was time for me to change jobs.
We're just conversations.
Okay.
So it's not no structure.
Okay, all right.
You can go as far as you want to. Well, one thing I was going to say, when I went to Paris, you can always have a job out there drawing people.
But somebody still can buy it. That's the thing.
Just on the side, you talking about the side of the street?
Oh, yeah, they just be like this.
Hey, I know.
You need your picture drawing?
Yeah.
Like every single place. Like they'll see me tell somebody else no. And then they'll specifically come to me and say, do you want your picture?
Are you anyway. Sure?
After about 10, I was about to lose it. Like, no.
You
I'm
should
serious.
Have just said yes to everybody and they can hear them.
Oh, no, they was going to get me for $1 million. I know what comes with that.
An expected donation?
Yeah, I know what comes with that.
Nothing in life is free.
So, before we get out of your full college experience, how was your UVA experience as a whole?
Oh, I loved UVAs.
What was your favorite part?
Honestly, I loved those classes I took my fourth year. I also had a great time. And had a great time at Boyland Infinity. But I had those those two classes, I mean, of course, I love my friends. I love, like, the freedom of rolling out of bed at 10 and heading off to whatever it was, 10 in the morning, or 1 in the afternoon, or whatever. But the looking back, the two classes I took that fourth year were the best. And my study abroad program was fantastic. My French classes were great. I think probably when I was in college, I would not have listed my classes being my most favorite thing. And now I look back and I wish I were taking those classes again. But I had wonderful friends too. And, it was a whole very, very different. It changed so much over the 4 years. I was so, I don't know if I've ever been quiet really in my life, but I was much more reserved my first year. It took me a really, really long time to figure things out and work through stuff. And then kind of like second year, I was feeling more comfortable. And then third and fourth year, I had just a really great time. Like, hit my stride.
What's your favorite? You have a favorite restaurant out there at UVA? Is it Boiling?
I do love Boiling. I'm sorry to say. I have gone back to Boiling as like an adult, and I don't recommend it.
No, it's different. It's different.
Mm, I mean,
what about Christian's Pizza? Still there?
Christian's is still good at 2 a.m.
That's it.
I never had it.
I have never had it
any other time of the day.
Before midnight.
It's not good for a slice?
No. Okay. I don't know about that.
So post UVA. We're talking UVA, just finished UVA, and you're thinking interior design coming out of college,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So you found a job doing interior design?
Mm-hmm. I did. Right.
Talk about that.
Yes, I found, this was also like kind of a wonky, crazy story, a little bit, I think. But I was starting like from ground zero trying to find an interior design job because it's not a major at UVA. There's really no classes on it. And I was just doing a bunch of informational interviews and just adding to my list of designers and emailing them and really like very scrappy trying to find a job. And I was sitting at my dining table, breakfast table, whatever, and my roommate had the Wall Street Journal, and I picked it up at the Sunday issue, has that like off duty, it's called. And there was an article on this woman's beautiful bathroom in Brooklyn. Her name's Jennifer Eisenstadt. I'm like, all right, Jennifer Eisenstadt, add her to the list. And so I emailed her, and she ended up, that was my first job. And she's absolutely wonderful. She's like one of my favorite people ever. She lives right here in Brooklyn.
I'm going to say, you want to point her address out?
Yeah. No.
I know
we
did
it
now.
But she's, so that was such a wonderful experience, and I was with her for 2 years and learned a lot, and then it was time for me to go on to a bigger.
So what did you not like about the interior design?
Well.
So you went to another interior design?
Yeah, store. I did, but in between, I wasn't quite ready to, after I was, Jennifer, I would have worked for forever and ever and ever, and she knew that, but it was time for me to work for a bigger firm. And rather than just jumping right to the next, I decided to see what would happen if I just only painted, like only made art. And I had met through friends this guy who had done this program in the south of France years prior.
So
like,
this is your second time back in France.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're fluent. You're actually good.
But I just kind of had filed this place called the Marchand School away in my mind, and I ended up going there for 3 months. I subletted my apartment at the time, and went and painted in the south of France for 3 months in 2016. It was absolutely wonderful. And then I came back and worked for another firm for 2 years. And you asked why I got out of the interior design.
Well, hold on. I want to know, first of all, you tried to do like painting full time, right? Was this trip to France?
To France.
Or was this like,
yeah.
How was that experience as far as like trying to figure out if you can do this?
So great. So I didn't go thinking I would be painting full time. Okay. Like that, I mean, I knew I didn't go thinking I would come back as a full-time painter, mm-hmm. I should say. I went kind of thinking, let's just see what happens.
Yeah.
Can I paint? Does it work? You know? And it's a very intensive, like, you're learning art history, you're seminars, reading great literature, Flannery O'Connor and Dante and whatever else, and this very, like, full-on experience. And you just make, I made a million, I made so many paintings in 3 months. I made like 90 or more paintings in 3 months, which is a lot.
So the business of painting, being a full-time painter, are people contacting you like, hey, I want a portrait painted? Are you painting and going to art galleries to sell them? Or how does that kind of work?
So, for the last, so it's been 4.5 years that I've been full-time.
Okay.
But even before that, when I was working for a firm, I was starting, and I'd come back from France, and was working for a different firm, and I was posting my artwork online,
yeah.
On my Instagram, and people were starting to ask, like, hey, I saw you painted your dog. Could you paint my dog? I see, like, or they were interested in something that I had painted of my own volition. And I was like, oh, people do want to buy. This is kind of great. And so they'll reach out now and get lots of commissions. So I have different kind of income streams.
Okay.
One is like commissions where people ask, like, dog or house or kids, wedding, whatever. Another is what I call studio works, paintings that I just make of my own volition.
I mean, it's like equity. You know, if you create it, it's intellectual property. So however many more you create, I mean, technically it's inventory.
Yeah.
You can always sell it, you know
what
I'm saying?
So,
I mean, I can see, so you said you make like 90 in 3 months?
That's a lot.
That was a lot. You're like a little way.
That was a lot. I have never ever had. I have never had that comparison.
That's how I'm gonna start that YouTube clip.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. So when you came out, you know, I know you mentioned Instagram, but when you came out, at least I know a little bit older than you, but when we came out of college, the internet still wasn't that big. You know, even Reels wasn't there, TikTok, all that stuff.
Yeah.
How have you used that a lot to kind of like build your brand? Is that like
Instagram,
helping? Hurting?
Instagram totally.
Okay.
I mean, Instagram, without Instagram, I don't think I would be around. I mean, it's really crazy. I kind of shudder at the thought of, like, if my account shut down, but, yeah, Reels and stuff I'll do. I have one woman who's, like, a friend who helps me now, so I can't really say that I'm a one-woman show. But I, like, any of the Reels or any of all of that, it takes so much time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's ways, you know, you get better at it over time or whatever, but I just frankly don't really have the time to invest in it, even though I know it can help your algorithm and whatever else. But like I do that. I know I should have a TikTok. I technically have a TikTok. I have posted videos on it, but I'm not on there a lot. It's just a lot of time, and I need to paint. Like, my job is not to, like, write emails and stuff.
Like, marketing studio.
Yes, I know. I need to paint. I need to, like, be in the studio. So that's a juggle. That's a juggling act for sure.
It's a true entrepreneur, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, trying to balance between, like, the actual product or the actual service to the actual sales.
Yeah.
But sometimes the product is the sales.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that?
All
you know what I'm saying? You sound like you're saying it's more so me focusing on my product, because without my product, I have nothing to sell.
Right. But without marketing, there's no, who knows that it's there? So, it's a real balancing act. I think I've kind of figured it out. I do mornings. I'm not a morning person, so mornings are not very productive. I do, like, the computer work kind of side mornings. And then I paint the evenings. And that is a good balance for now. Eventually, I think I'll start outsourcing some things.
We'll
see. You got to sell a few more paintings before I do that.
And let somebody else worry about, you know, conducting the trains out of the station.
So
let's talk about this. This value, this pricing.
There you go. I want to know this one.
I want to
know this.
So where did you come up with the idea of how much your time is worth?
At a price.
Yeah, your time is. I'm gonna break it down for you.
All right, okay.
This is your time. This is your what you consider to be your masterpiece, right? In a single moment. Then how do you put a value on that? And does, I guess, start with that, and then I got some more questions.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I received some very good advice when I was first starting out.
Okay.
From a painter, and he said you probably have three prices in your mind. One is gonna, you know, high, middle, low, obviously. It's like one is probably gonna be too high and you're cheating the customer. One is too low and you're cheating yourself. So pick the middle one. And then as you go and grow and evolve and get more of a name for yourself or whatever, your time is worth more to you, et cetera, et cetera, then that chain that will go up. But that was the best piece of advice I ever received. And it's true. If you're thinking, you know, oh, I could probably get this amount.
Yeah.
But you don't really feel so good about that. It's like kind of, you get,
I feel good.
I know. But then, so maybe that's your middle number then.
Yeah, I feel good. But, if I can get it for 10.
Maybe present company accepted, but most people feel like a little bit icky. And then, but if you sell it for too low, then that's like a worse feeling, frankly. And so, like, that kind of Goldilocks bit of finding.
How do you take into account, like, size, materials, whatever you're using, like, those are the type of things to come up with pricing?
Yeah, I mean, materials can be a bit tricky.
Like, Art Basel, you got people selling, like, bananas taped to the wall.
I know. We're not talking Art Basel here in this studio. We don't have an Art Basel girl here.
It's coming close.
We'll see. Do you have a connection for me?
Maybe.
Okay. All right.
We'll see. We'll get you somewhere.
Let's talk. This podcast
is pretty big.
Off mic.
I'm like a crazy bird naming and claiming.
Let's put it out there. I mean, a lot of what I do are watercolors, and the materials are, like, pretty negligible, to be quite honest. I mean, of course, it adds up over time, but it's not. Oil painting is more expensive in general. And so with that, I just think, honestly, it's arbitrary.
Yeah.
Like, that's the big secret. Yeah. It's totally arbitrary, the prices.
What about size? Like?
Yeah, I do based on size. And I kind of, when I first started and I just continued on this way, I was like, okay, this is like a 9x12, and which is just a standard size.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, here's my, like, my middle price that I'm comfortable with, like I just talked about. And then based on, like, if it's a little bit bigger, I charge a little bit more.
Yeah.
If it's a little bit smaller, I charge a little bit less. And I've just kept that up, like, a little bit bigger is a little bit more. It's kind of, I don't really do it by percentages.
That's interesting. You know, one thing that I'm raising capital for my company right now, and
congratulations.
I was, like, putting a valuation on my company, and one of the founders that I was using as a mentor, they were like, take the valuation off, and you have more success in selling it if you let them tell you what the value is in their mind.
Interesting. How's that going?
Well, this is better than it was when I had the price tag.
Okay.
Because I had the price tag, like, extremely high because it's my situation,
baby.
Right?
Yeah.
So when I hear what other people are coming back with, I'm like, all right, I can make that work, mm-hmm, type situation. So have you ever thought about anything like that?
No.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to put a price tag.
No. Yeah.
This is my price.
Well, yeah. You know, it's a little different, right, because it's a tangible,
yeah,
it's tangible object. And what I think what's tough is that people a lot of times have absolutely no idea, and it makes them uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
For me to say, like I have been in a position where I think I just felt like a street artist, and I'm like, how much is this? And he's like, you name your price. And I was like, I can't name my price. Like, I don't, it was when I first went to City, I'm like, I'm always on my to-do list to list on more online platforms because it's just more. Just
eyes.
Another place,
like
more eyes.
Like Amazon,
But it's often like it's extremely Have you ever tried to buy art on an online platform? I've looked at some. It's so overwhelming.
I've been wanting to invest in more art because they said you can put any value you want on it for your taxes.
You can.
Yep.
Oh.
Art is a big conspiracy theory. Art is just a way to dodge money.
That's true.
So I have a couple of pieces that will be showing up on my tax returns.
That's a deduction?
Yeah,
it's a loss?
My disvaluation.
There you go.
No, that's definitely dope. So do you still have any fears? I know you talked about, like, you know, having some fears out of college as far as sustainability and, like, being a full-time artist.
Yeah.
Do you still have any of those fears?
No. I mean, like, it's different when you work for yourself, right?
Yeah.
Because when I was working for... When I had a salary job, I had a paycheck, and I knew even if I got sick, if my, you know, broke my arm or whatever, had a family emergency, I was still going to get a check.
Yeah.
I might not get, like, a bonus at the end of the year, but I didn't really get that anyway.
Yeah.
That's more of a finance thing, I think. But now it's like, I know what I made last year, but I don't know what I'm going to make this week. And if I get hurt or, you know, I had a family emergency last year and I took 2 months off, and so I didn't make any money for 2 months.
Wow.
And, I mean, you know, it kind of rolls in and I have contingency plans.
Yeah.
And I have savings for that very reason and all of that, but it's kind of a different thing of, I've figured it out, in other words. It's not a fear anymore, but it took a while of, rather than kind of looking, it's like an inverse of how, like, you've always learned how to spend. It's like when you have a paycheck, you're spending from what, like, from the future. Yes, totally.
Okay.
And now it's like, okay, what have I saved, and how... Like, what are my projections? But what if? And, like, the emergency kind of thing. So it's like,
yeah,
just falling. That's extreme. But it's like, what if? Like, even art fair is different, but I might be projecting to make X amount in a weekend at an art fair, and then there's a hurricane. This happened.
Yeah.
And for two fairs in the last year, they were rained out. And so that's... There's no paycheck or anything from that. So I was just,
you know, one thing that really, what I'm kind of hearing from you is, like, what I kind of experienced when I got into business was that I removed the fear. The uncertainty was actually less because I knew how to make money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Versus
yeah.
when I was getting paid a check, I just thought this is the only way to make
money. Right.
So,
yeah. And now, like, you know, if I need to push more, for instance, like when the two fairs fell through very last minute, and two different times of the year, I knew I needed to do another push, so I sent more emails. I, like, ramped it up on Instagram.
Yeah.
I had, like, it was last October, there was a hurricane in Williamsburg, and I was supposed to have this art show, and show was rained out. And so I was at my mom's house, and we just had a little, what we call a front porch fair. And so I set up my work on the front porch and invited, you know, sent out an email to everybody who I know in Williamsburg.
Yeah.
And they came in and shopped on the front porch.
Rather than
that started in COVID, actually. That's really where I was 1 year into working for myself.
And COVID hit?
And COVID hit.
Oof.
And
did people buy more art then?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
Because they were sitting on their sofas at home.
I mean, looking on these walls.
Yes,
yep.
Looking at their blank walls. And
I think I got my piece during COVID, actually, too.
Yeah, it's like...
Probably.
You work from home, you want to dress up your office a little bit.
Yeah, and you weren't spending on going out to eat or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, it was a really difficult time for, I know, a lot of people, but others...
Booming.
Yeah.
So, going off that thing, what is a growth plan for you? Is it to become more of a... household name, so your pieces sell more? Is it an inventory game? How do you grow in the art business or just in your business?
Yeah, interesting. This is a good question, Matt.
So you participate?
Yeah, nice of you to speak up over there.
So
right now, really where I'd like to go growth-wise is right now, I do so many commissions, which is great.
Yeah.
But the commission is something that someone else has asked me to do for them. and you'd kind of always rather do what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
So I would love to, right now commissions are like 60%, and then art fairs and like what I call studio art is like 40% of my income. And I would love to swap that and kind of have, or keep it. Actually, I should say it's fine to keep it like a big percentage, but I need to increase my rates, and so
mm-hmm.
I'm theoretically making fewer paintings for more. Because if it's a special request, that's like so. There's that, and then hopefully the grand scheme is to have fewer like quantity of commissions. And then that would give me more time to make the studio.
Getting back to this business of art. Can you talk about appreciation?
I can't.
You can't talk about appreciation.
I don't know much.
I can just say whatever for my pieces. Like for your pieces, do you the longer the piece has been around, would you say it's worth more or if it's worth less? Because like I don't think it can be worth less. Yeah, the Picasso and the Van Goghs, you know what I'm saying? Like it seems like when people die and stuff,
because,
like they became
always.
They can never make another one.
Like so yours has been in the inventory for longer. That seems like that should be on sale. You know what I'm saying?
I should not hire you.
Well, we're just trying to understand the business from if it was a tomato, you know what I'm saying? It would be on sale.
Yeah.
So from our perspective, you're never going to drop your price.
No.
Okay, cool. So you never drop your price, but will you make it higher?
Every year.
So every year
it's
going
up.
Every
year it goes up.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any piece.
So buy quick. Yeah.
Buy quick, you get best deal. That's interesting. That's a good selling point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So as soon as she posts,
that's
you
the best,
buy it.
This is the best price you'll get.
Buy it.
If you don't get it now, you wait for a year, it's going to be up more. So, that's awesome.
You're back in the running for my market.
All right, back. What would you tell someone who is interested in doing art full time?
Mm-hmm.
They have the same concerns you may have had.
Mm-hmm.
They may be thinking about, I may want to be an interior designer or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, what would you suggest to that person that's in school?
They might have a handle called Man's Watercolor, something like that.
Yeah.
Something
they just put an application in to work for Max.
Yeah.
You know,
they're really trying to change their career goals right now.
Like, what would you tell that person about, what you would do if you were in that same position and how they should best maneuver themselves to get to that? So.
I mean, honestly, I have learned so much get my path to where I am. But I don't know that I would really have changed that much. I don't think I would go back and study art in college. Take some classes if you want. That's great. But the most important part to me, honestly, in the business of art is the marketing side.
Yeah.
Like you have to have the product. You have to have confidence in your abilities and the style, as they say, that's like your own. But in other words, like the product has to be there. You can't kind of get around that too much. But so much of it is marketing.
Yeah. Is that what you're saying right now? Are most of the highest paid popular artists, and I don't even know who they are today,
mm-hmm.
but are they the best marketers as well?
Yeah, and a lot of them are working for, like, the art is also good, but there's a lot of talent in the world. And there's different kind of ways to look at the art world. There's, like, me, who I don't have gallery representation, nor do I really want it, like, maybe eventually down the line. Galleries take 50%, it's a lot. They do a lot for you. But you have to, I like the marketing side. I know.
They do a lot of the gallery. It gets an open warehouse.
I know. You know, they market for
you.
They ship
it
for you. They stretch it for you. They do, or theory, whoever. Maybe they frame it for you, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So all of like the admin stuff that I'm doing now, they do. But you know what? I like the marketing side. I like knowing who I'm selling to and who's bought my work and all of that. And that really goes by the way, with the gallery. But like the really big artists now, they have the galleries to do that marketing side for them, and the galleries who they work with have their own name credibility wise and all of that. But that's kind of, that's like up here. I'm not really messing with that. But a lot of it is just consistency and, you know, like you're a brand. I'm a brand. So I show my face. I show my, you know, I am the one who does my Instagram, and I'm kind of like my, like, wonky self on there. And I show the behind the scenes and, yeah, and all of that too. So that it kind of, it works, and I remind people when they need to be putting in orders for Christmas, which is coming up. And all of that. That's like, that's yeah, the main side. It's like, make a lot of work too. Like get your, have a good practice and don't lose that side yeah of it. But if you really want to be selling, go market.
We're going to get a commission piece of this shot right here.
All right.
Yeah, we did.
So where can people meet you, or not meet you,
reach you.
Where do you want them to go to, like, find your stuff? Seems like it's Instagram, TikTok, but
Instagram, not really TikTok.
Yeah. Okay, not TikTok. Don't go to TikTok.
Yeah, you can. I haven't been on there in a long time. My Instagram.
What's your handle?
LucyClaireSpooner.artist, and there's no I in Claire. Yeah, on my website, my full name, LucyClaireSpooner.com.
It's good real estate. It's good digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Mouthful. It's mouthful.
What about email? You got an email you want to put out there?
LucyClaireSpooner@gmail.
There you go.
So they can know what to find.
That's where they're going to reach you at. We appreciate you being on here. We're going to do one thing before we close.
Okay.
We're going to do our podcast questions. So we do rapid fire questions.
Okay.
This first thing comes to mind is this or that.
Okay.
You choose and go
okay
from there.
All right. Ready.
All right. So hotels or Airbnbs?
Airbnb.
Listen to books or read books?
Read.
Go to movies or watch Netflix?
Netflix.
Cable or stream?
Stream.
IG stories or IG posts for your marketing?
Stories.
All right. Watch the news or read the news?
Read.
Would you rather start a podcast or write a book?
Book.
Apple or Android?
Apple.
Detroit pizza or New York pizza?
I've never had Detroit pizza.
So it's New York.
New York.
And then our favorite one for this... For our podcast is, if you were moving, would you hire a moving company or would you get your friends to help you move? I guess it might be the same for you, though.
I think it's the same. That's
fair. We'll leave it at that.
Leave it at that.
All right, man. Well, we appreciate you, Claire. It was great to have you on
thank
here.
You.
And thank you. So that's it. Well, yeah.
Great.
Thanks, guys.